At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome, welcome, everyone, to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We want to give a shout-out to any new listeners who are joining us for the very first time. We're happy to have you on board. For those of you who have been here from the start, you already know the drill. We live and die by this team just like the rest of you, and we make no apologies for that. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to check us out on Twitter, you can find our podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining me tonight from the city of Reading, Pennsylvania, is Micah Storms. Micah, how are we doing?
Jason, I'm here. I usually am a positive person, but I'm having a hard time with this one. If Brian Baio did not look as good as he did, which thank goodness he did because he was the only saving grace in this series, I don't know how I would be feeling, because I'm trying to just imagine Baio's start in the future with him, because that's the only positivity from this three-game series against Miami. So I'm here. I'm happy to be talking baseball with the two of you, but I don't want to talk the Red Sox.
Welcome to the trenches, my friend. Yeah, sometimes it happens. We'll find a way to dig our way out. Also joining us tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how's it going?
The Great Depression of Red Sox baseball continues. Dan Shaughnessy, by the way, quote tweeted that, and 200,000 views, I think. It was what it. All the haters came out. I got destroyed all night on that one, because they were like, 86 years, you know, that had to have been it. And I'm like, well, you had Ted Williams. There was a lot of romantic moments in there, and I don't know that it was all incompetence, you know, so. This to me in my lifetime. And then I tried, and then Carrabas chirped me, and I'm like, well, you did have kind of a depression, you know, this century, you know, 2008, the big collapse. But to me, I mean, this is brutal. But quick check of the standings real quick. There's no secret, folks. Red Sox still in last. I think we've been there well over a month now. 2 games under 500, 5 games back from the wild card, 15 games back from the Tampa Bay Rays. Just Tampa, just this might be their year. I'll tell you what, though. In 1997, in 2003, who thought the Marlins were going to win the World Series? I am just saying. We didn't think the Nationals were going to win it in 2019. Certainly nobody had the Braves on August 1st, 2021, winning that one. So, I don't know. It's there's just something magic about that team. Jazz Chisholm, did you see those monster shots he hit out to straightaway center? Just unreal. One of them was off Jansen. I don't know. Kind of a fun team to watch. Arise, we didn't really see. He had a couple of hits, but not, you know, wasn't spectacular. I was hoping to see a little bit more magic out of him, but.
Yeah, that's the surprising part. They got swept by the Marlins, and they somehow pretty much contained Luis Arraez for the most part. But you're right, they've got some good young pieces on that team. Chisholm is a stud. Now that he's back healthy, he's going to help them a lot. They're a fun team to watch. And as far as the Red Sox, we were talking off the air before we came on, you know, the American League is just such garbage that if the Red Sox just went on a run, they just went on one run, you know, winning 7 out of 8 or something like that, they could be right in one of those wild card spots. They're just not doing it. They're not doing it. And it's mostly offense driven. There's some pitching performances that have us a little concerned, but we'll cover all of it in our usual midweek bottom five. Again, just another awful series here for the midweek show, but we're kind of getting used to it at this point. So it is the bottom five. So leading us off in the five hole, Terry, who do we got?
We are going with the middle infield prospect that was called up, a little over a week ago, David Hamilton. Expectations for him weren't high. He wasn't this highly touted guy. Which trade did we get him in, by the way? I think that was the Renfro trade. That was the
Renfro trade,
yes. So
he came along with Jackie Bradley.
And I don't even know where Alex Benelis is anymore. He was supposed to be the prize of that trade. But anyway, Hamilton projects out to be, you know, this utility, middle infield guy. And wasn't really a great series for him. Basically just 1-for-6. And then not very fluid as a shortstop, as it turned out. I mean, he spiked a bunch of balls into the ground, which, you know, couldn't be fielded by the first baseman. Tonight, a weird, it was a chopper hit to Arroyo. He couldn't come up with it. It lands in Hamilton's glove, but then he can't do the transfer. It just comes flying out on the transfer. Just looks like a fish out of water. I don't know if it's just, you know, if the moment's too big for him right now, you know, in his earliest stages as a big leaguer. Maybe it's a product of a very chaotic, you know, environment where things aren't going well as a whole for the team. I mean, this is a tough time to be called up. If you're a Red Sox prospect, you know, it's better off if the team's winning or if it's after the trade deadline and you've sold off Turner and Kike and all these other guys and it's super low pressure. But not a very good introduction from Hamilton.
Micah, thoughts on Hamilton?
Yeah, it's difficult to get a read just because it's such a small sample size. But I had tweeted this out, I believe, yesterday. When he makes throws from shortstop, his throwing motion just does not look like a shortstop. It's a very long motion, and it looks like he has to put all of his effort into his throw to get it over there, and it's just not accurate. As you said, Terry, it could just be a small sample size. But with how awful that position has been, and the expectations of somebody has to stop the bleeding with all of the errors at shortstop, it just continues. And that puts a lot of pressure on him. I don't know if it would be as glaring of an issue if it wasn't for Kike throwing 700 balls away at shortstop and, you know, just the other people who've been over there that just have struggled. But Red Sox fans are sick of seeing throwing errors. But it also doesn't help. You know, you have a young player. It does not help that Casas is not good at first base right now. You know, you don't have a first baseman who can, you know, pick one out of the dirt for you and save you. You know, and we saw today with Turner, we'll get to him, but he's not going to do it either. So you don't have a first baseman that can, you know, save an error or two. And it's just a bad combination. And we just continue to see a Red Sox defense that it's kind of the Heimblum trademark in terms of this is the defense we've seen. And it's shocking for a guy who, you know, it claims to be this analytics guy. How do you completely ignore the defense? I just, that to me, like, it just doesn't mesh. Analytics and defense go hand in hand, and the Red Sox just, they're not using analytics and defense because the defense would not be this bad if they were. It's almost historically bad how bad they've been for the last 4 years. And it's just, I don't know how it improves. I think it's going to be like this for the remainder of the year, maybe three. I mean, you would think a guy coming back from Tommy John surgery probably is going to have some throwing errors. You would kind of expect that. So I just feel like the defense is going to continue, and it's going to drive Red Sox fans nuts until the end of the season.
Yeah, the point about the first baseman is a good one, because even Millar, you know, on the broadcast at one point sort of ran through all the good defensive first basemen that the Red Sox have had throughout history. You know, Doug Minkiewicz, Mitch Moreland, you know, that was always a position that they, you know, they really dedicated not just to good hitting, but they always had a good glove over there. They don't have that right now. Casas and Turner, they're not going to pick a bad throw. So when you've got Hamilton short hopping throws over there left and right, it's just, it's a recipe for disaster. I do feel a little bit for the kid. I don't want to be too hard on him because I don't, this is not like a top 10 prospect that people are expecting to turn into, like, you know, Ricky Henderson. He's got great speed, but not much with the bat. You know, he's a kind of a slap hitter, if anything. I think his only real position he can field is second base. I can't see him playing anywhere else on the field. And when I first saw him, my first impression was, boy, he's tiny. You know, he's a small kid. I'm not surprised that, you know, he doesn't have great arm strength. He's actually bigger than Mookie Betts. Hamilton's 5'10", 188. Mookie's 5'9", 180. And Mookie's got a cannon for an arm and is a phenomenal athlete. Hamilton doesn't look like an athlete to me. Like, he's fast. He's absolutely got natural speed. But, like, there's not much, like, upper body-wise, he just looks very thin up there. Just the jersey, like, you know, looks like it's hanging off of him. It's, I just don't think he's a great athlete. I think he's just got some tools and that's about it. So, but again, he was a low level prospect that you got as part of a package deal. And he's being forced into this situation because of injuries and depth problems. And the fact that, you know, we can't trust Kike Hernandez, almost, you know, 10 year veteran or whatever he is, to play shortstop. So it's a tough look. It's tough to see him struggle out there, but you know, this is where we're at. You got guys like David Hamilton who are not major leaguers, pinch runners, if anything, and they're starting games for you and getting significant time. It's just, these results are bound to happen.
We don't have a Scoops McGee type first baseman is what we're getting at. And man, you know what thought like creeped into my head? I'm like, man, I think I miss Hanley Ramirez's defense at first. I mean, remember, I thought he was pretty adequate. But here's the crazy thing. In terms of rankings of best defensive Red Sox infielders, let's just go through that list real quick. Number one, Christian Arroyo. I think he's the best defensive infielder we have. He's, you know, he only plays maybe one or two out of every three games, not an everyday starter, so that sucks. I think your second best defender, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is Rafi Devers. Fewer errors from him. I mean, he is going to have them, but I think he's your number two. Justin Turner, who we've already said in the last few minutes, not the best, you know, he's not going to scoop him all the time at first, and then Casas and Kike. Those are your guys. Now, when Reyes comes off the injured list, he probably slots in at number two. Yu Chang might be the best infielder we have, but who knows when he's coming back. I think they are talking about a rehab assignment here in the near future, but that's pretty bad. Arroyo, number one, not an everyday guy. Devers number two. Micah.
Yeah, I completely agree with that list, which is, like you said, it's shocking. Another thing with the poor infield defense is they're trying to break in young pitchers, and there's nothing more frustrating for a young pitcher than to just see balls that are either booted or, you know, it feels like the announcers in the Red Sox games, they keep saying, oh boy, that was a tough big league play. Well, you're a big leaguer. Why don't you make a tough big league play? I don't think fans expect them to make them all of the time, but it seems like every time there's a really challenging play, it's just not made. And as a pitcher, like, these guys are trying to get big league hitters out. You know, pretty much all of them, many of them, for the first time, you know, for a full big league season, you know, at least in the rotation with Whitlock. And it just, the infield defense is so bad, and you're not helping these guys develop when, you know, they have to work even harder, and, you know, they're grinding innings all the way up to 25, 30 pitches. It doesn't help them. And I mean, you feel for the pitchers because they just get no support from the infield defense.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the announce team. And look, I always hammer the Red Sox announce booth. I know I do it a lot, but it's like, if I have to hear Kevin Millar one more time, it's like, oh, well, that's a tough play. You know, hey, nothing you can do about that. That's a tough one. No, it's they're welcome to the big leagues. There are going to be tough plays. Like you said, Micah, like, you're a big leaguer. Make the play. It's real, like, it's fundamental stuff, too. Like, it's not like, you know, we're not asking them to, you know, lay out for every line drive or, you know, do anything like that. It's just, can you field a ground ball and turn a double play? I mean, they can't even do that right now. And yeah, with guys like Whitlock, Bayo, you know, Houck, who, like, they like to get ground balls. They throw sinkers. They like to get ground balls. For those guys to have to trust this infield defense, yikes. Like I said, apart from Devers, but oof, it's rough. Speaking of one of those infielders coming in at number four on our bottom five, Micah, who we got?
At number four is Justin Turner. And I'd said a couple weeks back, with Turner this year with the Sox, it has felt like he's had really good series and then really poor series. It doesn't seem like there's really an in-between. And Turner was on a crazy hot streak for most of June. So it's hard for me to just crush him in this series, but he did go 1-for-12, and against this pitching staff, you know, he's a right-hander, so the Marlins really were left-handed dominant in terms of the pitchers they were throwing at the Red Sox. You know, you need your righties to step up and provide some offensive production, because they scored 3 runs in this entire series. Like, that's not going to get it done against a good Miami team, and you need guys like Turner to lead the group, and 1-for-12. It's not going to cut it. And like I said, I hate crushing on him because I'm a fan of him, and he's really carried the offense in the month of June. You know, this was the 16th time in the month of June that they scored 3 runs or less. And that's not because of Justin Turner. Justin Turner's been really, really good. He's probably got, I'd say, 50% of the RBIs this month. So again, it's hard to come down on him, but when you're looking for production, 1-for-12 from your two-hole hitter doesn't help. And then he also had an error at first base today, and it really put Bayo in a tough spot in the second inning, and Bayo made the pitches to get out of it. But you know, it's just Turner's another example of a guy under Heim Bloom who is playing out of position. Turner's a third baseman or a second baseman. And he's a pretty good third baseman, but he's never really played consistent first base. And to put him out there because you don't trust Casas against a lefty, not that Casas is better against lefties or even defensively, but it puts Turner in a spot for, you know, an opportunity for you to kind of go at him for his defense when really he's just out there trying his best. So tough series for Turner. I don't expect it to be anything an issue moving forward, but it is noticeable when the offense scores 3 runs in the series. You could pick anybody in that offense almost, but he did stick out in this 3-game series.
Terry.
Not really a ton to add. You know, when Turner's hot, the Red Sox have a much better shot to win. And as Micah said, I mean, we're the land of misfit toys, you know, just plugging pieces in all the wrong places. And, you know, we're not firing on all cylinders. And it's just too bad. I mean, in a perfect world, Turner would be DHing every day like they originally intended. But that's not the world we live in.
No, unfortunately not. And yeah, I agree. It's tough to rag on Turner too much, because for the most part, he's been one of your more consistent performers. And at times when the Red Sox were going well, he was driving the engine. You know, he was really setting the table for Devers and all the other guys in the lineup to do damage. When he goes cold, it's tough, you know, and you hope that if he goes cold, the rest of the lineup kind of picks him up. But that's not that kind of team this year. They're just, you know, it's once one guy goes cold, it's like a domino effect and it ripples through the rest of the lineup. And as far as defensively, he's doing what he can at first base. He's made a couple of plays over there, but yeah, he's been a third baseman, second baseman his whole career. you know, he hasn't had that many reps at first. So, you know, to put him over there because you refuse to play your star prospect against left-handers, which we'll get to that later. But, you know, to put him over there and to expect it to go well, it's like, again, like, what are you doing? What are you screwing around for? It's just, I don't know. You're asking for it. And Turner will pick it up. You know, he'll be on, he'll get it figured out, and he'll probably be on a top five list at some point going forward, knowing him. Blip on the radar kind of series, but definitely not a good one from him. So moving to number three on the list, we're going to go back to the outfield for this one, and that's going to be Adam Duvall, who has been very, very quiet since coming back from the wrist injury. He's been back for about 3 weeks now. He went 2-for-11 in this series, so he did have a couple of hits, but the power hasn't been there. He hasn't been hitting the ball out of the park. He's been roping a couple of singles, but that's it. And, you know, occasionally he'll draw a walk. Most of the time he's striking out. It's just, he's kind of reverting back to what he's been his whole career. And this is why, you know, when he was still injured and fans were saying, oh, well, just wait till Duvall comes back. Just wait till Duvall comes back. Then they'll pick it up. I said, have you guys not been paying attention to who Adam Duvall is and what he's been his entire career? Look, he's a good player. He's a very nice, good player to have on your team. This guy was never going to be the savior. He was not going to come back and hit 500 like he did, you know, the first week of the season. He was not going to come back and do what he did, late in spring training, where he's hitting the ball out of the park every other game. That's not who he is. He can run into one for sure. You know, once he gets fully, I think, back to, you know, the speed of the game and getting more used to that and getting more at bats under his belt, I'm sure he'll start running into more. He'll probably end up with, you know, double digit homers before we know it, but he's not there yet. And the problem is the Red Sox can't afford to really wait for him to get there because they're at a teetering point right now for their season. So it's tough on him because, you know, he's just coming back from the injury and he's being asked to shoulder the load for an offense that's just petering out left and right. It's a lot to ask for a guy who has never been really a centerpiece player for any offense. You know, he's always been sort of late middle or end of the lineup kind of guy. And he's being asked to do a lot. So he'll get healthier. He'll get more at bats. He'll get more used to the game speed and facing major league pitching again. But don't expect this guy to, you know, hit 330 homers. That's not who he is. He's a good player, has power, hasn't come back yet, but this is more like the Adam Duvall that you're going to get the rest of the year. And that's why I just found it amazing that so many Red Sox fans were, you know, just waiting with bated breath. Oh, well, once Duvall comes back, it's going to turn around. Not necessarily. You might just get more performances like this. Terry, thoughts on Duvall?
I said late in game two, Duran came off the bench. I forget who he was even pinch hitting for, but on the very first pitch, he rips a ball down the left field line. And I said, Duran just did in the seventh inning what he should have been doing in the first inning, you know, if he was in the starting lineup. And I don't really see the need to ride out this Duvall thing. And if I'm Bloom, I might even try to trade him. Go get some other team's Nick Pivetta. Go get that guy so that Caleb Ort doesn't have to open for you every fifth day. There has to be at least a little bit of value with Duvall still. Or go get a better arm in your pen than, I don't know, Richard Blyer. You know, go get a valuable lefty. I mean, who do we have that's a lefty right now? Do we even have one?
Bernardino.
Oh, Bernardino, my bad. Yeah, right. And he is one of our better relievers.
Murphy is a lefty as well.
Yeah, he didn't have a great outing this time. The jury's still out for me on who he really is, but I'm somewhat optimistic. If they keep him as a reliever, he might be serviceable. I don't want to see him starting. I just don't have a ton of faith there. But yeah, so I just... And then you know, we talked about Kike earlier. He could be your backup. If you don't want to start, if you don't want to start Durant on a given night, then put Kike in there. He's going to play a very good center field for you. And Kike's, his bad streaks are nowhere near as bad as some other players' bad streaks. I mean, Kike can get a little cold, but it's never brutal, and he does come up big for you. I mean, he had a leadoff hit. Was it in the ninth inning tonight, or was that the eighth inning? Late in the game, he led off the inning, got on base. So I don't want to see Kike playing the infield anymore. I don't want to see it, but you get rid of Duvall, you know, Duran gets to play more, and then the odd time you get the lefty, then fine, start Kike. But I think the Duvall ship has sailed. He could go off for a week, and I'm still not going to think we're going to win more games with Duvall than we will with Durant at this point. Durant is a much more dynamic player, and that's who I want to see getting the majority of the starts. Could you imagine, like, a Jacoby Ellsbury coming up in his first season and being blocked by a guy named Duvall? This would have been, like, 07, but that would have been so tragic. And so that's my take. The comeback wasn't what it was cracked up to be, and like Jason said, we shouldn't really be that surprised.
Micah.
Yeah, I feel for Duvall just because he was on fire before he got hurt, and he's just he hasn't caught up to the big league game just yet with his timing, and the pitchers are in mid-season form, and he's struggling. But Terry, you kind of read my mind there with the Duran call, because in Duran's last 15 games, he's hitting 350. Duvall's last 15 games, he's hitting 167. And I know oftentimes, you know, Duran, his splits are a little drastic, but if you never give these young players opportunities against left-handed pitchers, they're not going to improve. And, you know, I'd like to see a guy like Duran get some opportunities with that. I mean, he makes things happen with his legs all the time. Maybe he can draw some walks. This offense is just stagnant right now. They're not doing anything. And I don't know why you wouldn't want him to try to draw some walks, hit the ball on the ground, try to steal some bases. You have to try to manufacture some runs, and they're not doing that. And a guy like Duran can help with that. And the Red Sox are two games under 500, and I think they're like five games out of the wild card. So if the season is not, if you're not competing for a playoff spot, you're wasting opportunities to develop a guy like Duran and give him those opportunities, at least against lefties. Let's see what Duran can be. Then now is the time to see it, because I would much rather see the Red Sox know exactly who Jaron Duran is going into the offseason, then wondering, is he still kind of a platoon guy going into 2024? That's a question that should not be asked going into the offseason. They should know. I feel pretty confident with him righties against lefties. He's probably not going to get a lot of opportunities, or I think we can play this guy as an everyday guy. That's a question that needs to be answered in the next 3 months, and I think they should start now. Terry, you brought up about trading Duvall. I have an interesting idea here. Adam Duvall won the World Series with the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves probably could use a power bat like that. Why not a reunion? How about Ian Anderson? I know he's getting Tommy John surgery. He had it in April, but why not acquire a pitcher like that who had crazy success early on? I think he's only 24 years old. Take a flyer on a guy like that. See what happens. But I would be interested in something like that. It's an outside-the-box idea. But Adam Duvall right now, if he's not providing power, he really doesn't have a value to this team, especially when you have a guy like Duran just sitting on the bench and rotting when Duvall's in the lineup.
And I think what inevitably is going to happen is if this season keeps trending the way it is and the Red Sox really start to fall out of it and they talk about, you know, well, we're going to be probably sellers. And this was a bridge year anyway. It was only supposed to be a bridge year. Okay, well, then guess what? Adam Duvall doesn't need to play every day. If that's what it's going to turn into, if this is going to turn into a bridge year and you're going to sell, then Jaron Duran has to play every day in center field. Tristan Casas has to play every day at first base. If that's what it's going to be, because otherwise, you're right, Micah. It's like, why is Duvall getting more time over Duran when the team's probably not going anywhere this year? So at this point, you should be pretty set on Jaron Duran being your center fielder going forward for the foreseeable future. I think he's proven himself enough. So yeah, at that point, move Duvall. And I do like the Ian Anderson idea. Why not? You know, 24 years old. He did flash when he first came on the scene. At this point, take a chance, because I don't know what much else you could get for Duvall. You're not going to get like a stud reliever or a stud prospect, because he just hasn't had enough time. So teams are going to look at him and say, well, we're not going to give you much because we're basically banking that he can get back to form in like 2 months. And that's a tough ask. So maybe that's the kind of deal they make where they do trade him and it's more for a guy who's not going to impact your team this year, but maybe next year, you know, going forward. I don't hate the idea, because I want Duran out there every day at this point. I'm done with the Adam Duvall experiment. You know, Duran has showed me enough. He should be the guy. So hopefully they feel the same way.
That would be like the most high move ever, though, right? Oh, he just had Tommy John. You know,
oh, yeah.
And for the record, I would probably do that deal, but he would be your 2024, you know, summer, you know, player that you're waiting for, you know, like it was Chris Sale last year, like it's Trevor Story this year. It's just like, yeah. So, all right. I'm up, aren't I?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Number two. Who we got?
We will go with the manager, Alex Cora, in the two slot. I'm going to go backwards here. Tonight, game three, it was just kind of weird that you pinch run. You send in David Hamilton to pinch run. And then in that very next at bat, Connor Wong pops up a bunt and causes an out. Like, if you're putting David Hamilton, who's one of the fastest runners in Major League Baseball, I don't know if he's the fastest, but he did steal 70 bags last year in the minors, so pretty fast. Why are you bunting? Like, why would you need him to be the runner? Like, as long as it's anybody but Tristan Casas on first base, they're going to get to second on the bunt. So maybe Connor Wong did it on his own. I don't know. I find that hard to believe, especially being that he's a catcher. You know, his baseball IQ should be a little bit higher than that. You know, the guy's either going to steal anyway, you know, but I thought that was weird, so I don't know if that's on Alex Cora or not, but this next thing is definitely, in my opinion, on Alex Cora. Nick Pivetta dealing and was starting to show signs of maybe losing it, like Nick Pivetta does. You know, he can be brilliant for the first three innings, and then something happens in his brain, and it just, everything goes sideways. It was starting to rain and he walked two runners. I think there was one out at the time, and then the tarp comes out. And Alex Cora's move when the game resumed roughly an hour later was to put Josh Winkowski in the game again with two runners on, one out. And Winkowski can't keep the ball in the park. Like, everything's going over the fence with him. He's getting slapped around. And he didn't look terrible, and there was another defensive blunder on David Hamilton. I probably could have mentioned that earlier when we talked to him. kind of a soft grounder, and Hamilton couldn't come up with it, overthrew it, two runs, ended up scoring on it. But I just don't get why Winkowski was the guy. The two moves I would have went with, excuse me, if you want to stay conventional, somewhat conventional, go with Brennan Bernardino. He's your best non-eighth inning, best non-ninth inning guy so far. I mean, he's got an ERA in the low twos. You could have put him in there in that situation, or you could have went outside the box and put Chris Martin in. As goofy as it was, in the fifth or sixth inning, put Chris Martin in there. Let him hopefully get the two outs he needed without the runner scoring, and at least escape the inning. You know, and I know that's weird, but you have to be outside the box with this roster, with this rotation, with the bullpen, with the lineup. You have to be outside the box. If you stay inside the box, you're going to play like a last place team. So I didn't like putting Winkowski in there. And I just feel like the manager's asleep at the wheel. I think at this point, he's just going through the motions of a very familiar last place season.
Micah.
The first move of Hamilton not stealing, I agree, a bunt decision was very strange there. But Hamilton didn't leave first base the entire inning. That was interesting. Like, why not steal him when Verdugo's up? Or at least when, you know, Turner gets up, like, try to get him in a scoring position. I don't think any Red Sox fan would have been like, oh my gosh, why are you stealing him? Like, everybody in the building was probably saying, why didn't he steal? At least try. You have to try to manufacture runs when runs have been so hard to come by with this offense. So I was surprised that Hamilton didn't steal at all in the eighth inning. Going to the move for Winkowski, technically the move really should have worked because Wong had the pass ball and then Hamilton had the error. So really nothing on was Winkowski in that inning, but it really should have probably been Winkowski starting an inning fresh, like bringing him in with runners on base. Didn't love that. And the idea of being creative, that's necessary. Like what they're doing now, it's not working. So, you know, why save Martin for the eighth or ninth? And you're not going to get to him when the game's competitive. Like there's no reason to save him. You know, the game was on the line in that moment. Go to your best reliever. And then, you know what, if you get out of that inning and you have a blow up in the eighth, at least you got to the eighth and it mattered at that moment. But, you know, saving your arms for, you know, the eighth and ninth, it's not working with this team right now, at least on this current stretch. So I think you have to get creative. So, I mean, it's hard to critique a move that in theory probably should have worked. But Winkowski right now, he probably needs a low leverage, like the game's out of hand. Give him three or four innings just to get right, just to see some confidence, you know, because it's been a tough stretch for him for sure.
Yeah, the in-game stuff is definitely worth questioning with Cora. It's either that he's overthinking it and making a weird move, or he's asleep at the wheel and he's not pinch hitting what he should, or, you know, he's bringing in the wrong reliever for high leverage situations. The bigger problem I have with Cora is, like I talked about earlier, the development of the young players. So that's obviously a key for the organization this season. They really want the young guys to develop. So Tristan Casas in game one had three hits. And this is a guy who they've been waiting for him to wake up, you know, especially at the plate. You know, it's weird. Like, he woke up at the plate, but now his defense is slipping. But in a way, you'll kind of take that because you want him to really get going offensively, especially with the way the rest of the offense is going. He has three hits in game one. And then because you're facing two lefties in games two and three, he sits both games. Like, why? Why is Cora so afraid of letting Tristan Casas face left-handers? And same with Jaron Duran, like we talked about earlier. the kids aren't going to develop if you don't let them. And it's like Cora's just managing scared because, I don't know, maybe he feels like his job's on the line or something like that. But he does not want Tristan Casas facing left-handed pitching. And if I'm the organization, if I'm High and Bloom, I'm kind of looking at that going, that's our top prospect that a lot of people are banking on, including us. He needs to be able to hit left-handers because eventually we do want him playing every day at first base. So why are you benching him? He had, you know, again, he had a great game in game one. Like, why bench him after that? It just doesn't make sense. And the same with Duran. Now, the Duran thing may be because, you know, Adam Duvall was paid $10 million and maybe the front office is telling him, Duvall's got to play. You can't just sit him because, you know, as good as Duran has been, you've got to get this guy playing. So maybe that's the reasoning there. But some of the lineups, I don't know. I really question. And I don't know. He just looks like a manager who's kind of lost. You know, I don't think that him and the GM see eye to eye at all. I think that Cora is very much a he wants to win now kind of guy. I also think he's a little bit of a front runner of a manager. You know, when things are going really well and the team's playing well, he's the perfect manager because he'll keep everyone in a good mood and, you know, he gets guys fired up and he gets the most out of them. When things are going bad and the Red Sox are digging themselves a hole, Cora doesn't have that extra special something to help dig them out. He hasn't shown it yet. So I don't know. I don't know if like he's long for this team. If the plan is that we're going to, you know, focus more on development and we may not, you know, contend for the playoffs for another 2 years or something. I don't know if Cora is going to be on board with that. So it's something to keep an eye on because it's definitely been a weird season for him. And it hasn't felt like the vintage Alex Cora that we're used to. Feels like he's just kind of any other manager at this point, you know? So with that, Mike, did you have something to say? Sorry.
Yeah, real quick. With Braxton Garrett, that would have been the guy I probably would have let Casas face just because he doesn't have explosive stuff like Luzardo. Lefties are hitting 224 against Garrett and righties are hitting 253. So there's not a crazy split there. And I like you said, he's probably was the hottest hitter going into Wednesday night. To me, that's a guy that you probably know he's going to draw a walk or two just based on his eye. Like, give him a shot and see what he can do. And I thought Wednesday's game was the perfect opportunity to do it. I would not have played him today against Luzardo. I don't think any lefty other than Devers probably I would have felt comfortable getting a hit against him. But Garrett, he throws 90 to 92 miles an hour. Give him a chance. That was the matchup I thought Casas should have started.
Yeah, absolutely. Just kind of a mystery on that one. Terry?
And I think I've mentioned this before, but you talk about Cora's relationship with Bloom. I mean, look at 2018 and the team he had. And whenever there was a need, you know, Dombrowski took care of it. You know, he needed another starter. Okay, well, here's Nathan Eovaldi. Hanley isn't really gelling well. His personality is a little weird. Okay, here's Steve Pierce. And Hanley's gone now. Brazier was kind of a good score at the time, pitched some high leverage there, you know, going down the stretch, but in 2018, just for the record. But so, you know, that was Cora's first year, you know, managing the Red Sox. And then look at how sad it's been since. Like, nothing gets addressed. He's constantly winging it. He doesn't have pitching ever. So I don't know. It just, he must really miss the Dombrowski era, I would think.
Yeah. Well, that's why I sort of labeled him as a win now manager. And I wonder if he's kind of looking around going, this isn't going to be a win now situation for a while. I don't know about this.
So what you're saying is he'll be managing the Mets next year.
Wouldn't shock me. Yeah. Wouldn't shock me. Let's put it that way. But he wasn't the worst of this series. There's one guy that stood apart from the rest, and he comes in at number one on the list, and that's my guy, Garrett Whitlock, who just pitched awful in the series debut, only made it 4 2/3, 6 earned runs on 11 hits, gave up a couple of bombs. He did have 6 or 7 strikeouts as well, but he just looked so vulnerable and so hittable in that game. It was not the Garrett Whitlock we've seen the past few starts, where he's looked really good and really efficient, you know, going deep into games and just really, you know, dominating for the most part. But Miami was not fooled by him. That, you know, anytime he went to the soft stuff, the changeup or whatever, they were crushing it. So they were not fooled. They had him picked. And, you know, this is why I struggle with Whitlock. This is why I struggle to really say, yes, he should be a starter. And, you know, for a couple of starts, he was making me look like an ass, because I've been saying, you know, from the beginning of the season, I want him in the bullpen. I want him back in the back end of that bullpen, because I thought he was just so good there. And, you know, he gets hurt again at the start of the year, comes back, you know, had a couple of shaky starts at first, then really started to hit his stride. And then you get a clunker like this. And it's just, it really makes you wonder, like, is he ever going to string it together consistently to prove that he belongs in a starting rotation? Because we've seen pitchers go on stretches like that before, where they have, you know, 3 to 4 good starts and, okay, wow, yeah, this guy looks great. And then hitters figure him out and boom, he drops off the table and that's that. In this league, that happens all the time. So I'm still not sold. And I was very close. His last couple of starts, I was like, oh boy, I may have to like issue an apology tweet or something, because I don't know. He's making me look bad. I'm glad I didn't though, because this Miami start was just everything I was worried about. His stuff's not electric. Like Bayo's stuff is electric. You know, Chris Sale at his prime was electric. Whitlock has good stuff and has good pace and generally has good command. But when he doesn't have the commands, and you know, he just gets tattooed. So I'm still not sold. We'll see if he bounces back his next start. But you know, this is one of your young guys that was supposed to develop this year. This was supposed to be someone you could point to and say, well, if the Red Sox don't make the playoffs, at least Garrett Whitlock took a big step forward and looks like a frontline starter. If he keeps having clunkers like that, that's another thing that you won't be able to count on. You won't be able to say later on in the year. And that's a problem. So bad start for him. Like I said, hope he picks it up and figures it out, because they do need him to develop. They absolutely need it. But I just don't know if it's ever going to really come to fruition. Micah, thoughts on Whitlock?
Yeah, the start against Miami, I mean, he did not miss many bats. The 11 hits in less than 5 innings was concerning, because that's just a lot of contact. But what was driving me nuts on Wednesday night? No, it was Tuesday night he started. What was driving me nuts was fans kept that's 2 8 bad starts in a row. The Minnesota start, like, he was fine. It was an okay start. This start was bad, but it's driving me nuts, the back and forth. Oh, he's a starter now. Oh, he had a bad start. Now he's a reliever. Like, pitchers have bad outings all of the time. The best pitchers have bad outings all of the time. And he's not an ace. He's not going to be a number two. He's probably a 3 or a really good 4. That's probably his ceiling. Okay. 3s and 4s have bad starts. That's okay. And I just, this back and forth, you know, when he's developing, yeah, he's 27 years old, but he's never pitched as a starter for a full season. He's going to go through growing pains. I think Brian Bayo has more career starts than Garrett Whitlock does in the rotation. Just to give you some perspective on how young he is as a starter. You know, his stuff isn't as electric. I agree. But he's 2, or he's going through, you know, the order multiple times with 5, 6 innings, and it's not going to be as good. But the back and forth is driving me nuts. Give him a full season, and let's see where we are in August or September with Garrett Whitlock as a starter. And one last thing, I saw a couple of fans that were just saying, put him in the bullpen now. Put him back in the bullpen. There's no reason to see if he can start. Those fans just – I do not understand those fans at all. They are driving me crazy, because how can you honestly make an argument that this team would be better with Garrett Whitlock in the bullpen? I have no idea. Like, who's going to start these games if you move Whitlock to the pen? Like, he may be a reliever. That might be where he is at his best. But for the current state of this Red Sox team, he should be starting. They should be trying to see where he is. Can he start? Because that would be where he would be giving this team the most value based on his contract, if it's possible. But let's evaluate it at the end of the year when he's had 20 starts, 22, 23 starts, whatever it ends up being, then evaluate him. But the analysis from start to start and going back and forth, it is driving me insane. I just can't take it.
Terry.
Yeah, I mean, you already have Caleb Ort starting every fifth day, or Justin Garza in that slot. So who's your other opener going to be if you move Whitlock into the pen? I mean, you've made your bed this year as far as what you're doing with him. Now, if we have a drastic offseason and he doesn't pitch well the remainder of this season, you can have a conversation about possibly putting him in the bullpen. But I was curious to see how he was going to pitch against the Marlins, because in his previous start against the Twins, also not great, gave up 8 hits, 4 earned runs, a lot of hard contact. There were a couple of balls that could have went out, if the conditions were a little bit different. You know, they were basically going to the warning track. So labored through that. I was wondering if this Miami start could be perhaps a bit of a bounce back, but seems like the rest of the league knows how to, you know, they know what he's doing with his changeup specifically, and, you know, they're sitting on it and they're crushing it. And he threw, I can't remember, it was 8 or 9 of them in the first inning, and then he stopped throwing it. He just stopped throwing it. And he basically got buried right away, struck out actually a rise in the very first at-bat of the game. I'm like, well, that's a good start. You're striking out 2023 Ted Williams. Good start. And then Jorge Soler, who's having a great season all of a sudden, hits a single. And then Brian De La Cruz, admittedly, not super familiar with him. He sends one over the fence. They were up 2-0. Jazz Chisholm, who had a very good series against us, hit a double. Garrett Cooper drove him in. So he's down 3 runs right away, first inning. And it just wasn't a good start. So the league has kind of figured him out. He's going to have to make his adjustments now and see if he can kind of right the ship and get a step ahead of the guys in the batter's box. And I hope he does it. And I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other, whether he's a starter or a reliever. I haven't really made up my mind yet. I'd love for him to be like the next John Lester type guy. I think he could be a number 2. I think that's what he was pitching to, a run of what, 6 or 7 starts. He very solid and, was giving the Red Sox a good chance to win those games. So it's a blip. We'll see what happens. I'm also a skeptic on his durability. I mean, he's had some injuries, a wide array of them. I mean, just doesn't seem to be, maybe it's genetics, I don't know. He just doesn't seem to be a very durable guy. I mean, we're going through it with Chris Sale. We went through it with Clay Buchholz his whole time here. He was in the booth, by the way, for I think it was a full inning. It was nice to see him, and I think we were kind of mean to him on the way out. And I feel a little bit guilty about that. And he hasn't really been back, so maybe he, remembers it, you know, very unfondly, I guess, if that's a word. But yeah, so wasn't a good start. And if you don't have, I mean, we're done anyway. I think we're dead in the water, but you're definitely dead in the water if Garrett Whitlock is malfunctioning. It's just, it's going to get uglier. And we're going to do the series preview, and that'll be later on in the day for the listening audience. James Paxton's start, a little bit up in the air. Brandon Walter scratched from his start tonight, so perhaps he might be starting for the Red Sox, or long relief, as they like to do it. You know, pitch your trashiest reliever in the first inning for no reason, and then, you know, let your prospect come into the game. Man, this rotation. Hauk got unlucky, but he could have got hurt some other way, right? I mean, he's not a durable guy either. Had back surgery, had elbow inflammation the year before that. Missed a month or two. Sale. I guess Sale's going to be throwing long toss again, so I don't know what that timetable is. A month, maybe. At the best case scenario, he could be back in a month. I don't know. Probably 6 weeks. This rotation, man, is so bad.
Yeah, it's rough. And that start on Tuesday night, you know things are going bad and you're not hitting your location when Gene Segura, who came in hitting under 200 with just one homer on the year, hits an absolute moonshot off Whitlock in that game on a hanging slider that was, I mean, little leaguers could have hit that over the monster. So it was rough. And just to clarify, I've always said from the start, I'm not sure about Whitlock. I think I prefer him in the pen. That said, for right now, absolutely. Like, he should start the rest of the year. I agree with you, Micah. Like, I don't like, you know, you don't give up on him on just a couple of bad starts and put him in the pen. I want him to have the full season. Let's see where he is at the end of the year. If his ERA is still over 5 and he's inconsistent and maybe gets hurt again, then yeah, sure, put him in the pen in 2024. But yeah, I agree. You have to ride it out with him, and you have to hope that he figures it out and develops, because that would be so huge for this team going forward and for the team's future. So we'll see what happens. We'll hope that he figures it out. So that'll wrap it up for us. As Terry mentioned, we're going to have our series preview show coming out later in the day. We're going to preview the Toronto series. Red Sox are back on the road, back in Canada. Hopefully away from all the wildfires and not having to deal with too much smoke up there. That's nasty too. So take a look out for that, and we will see you guys then. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.